a long walk home when the music stops.
Tune in to WGXC on Saturdays and late nights after midnight for radio art, radio theater, sound art, experimental composition, free jazz, noise, and other experimental works. WGXC 90.7 Akron and Hudson, listener-supported hands-on radio for Green and Columbia counties.
WGXE always needs computer donations. If you have an old one you don't need and it is either a Macintosh 2011 or newer, 2.0 gigahertz or faster CPU, dual core or more, or Windows 2012 or newer, 2.4 gigahertz or faster CPU, dual core or more, email info@wgxc.org for more information. WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Green and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Heidi Nielsen of Long Island City, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Green and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Like a fire hydrant, like a public drinking fountain, like a park bench, WGXC is always there for you, at your service. 90.7 FM, community radio.
Hello and welcome to a myriad of Musings and Music Summer Edition. As some of you may have noticed, many of our classmates have moved on from the radio show. The ones who remain are myself, Miles, Rafi, and Nora. We will be continuing the show through the summer in a similar way to how we were doing it before, interviews, music, and maybe current events. I hope you enjoy.
Great. So we have two interviews for you guys today. We'll just jump right in. Here's the first one.
We are here, Miles and I are here interviewing the Chief of Police in Hudson, New York, for the third time on our radio show now. And so, Miles, do you want to kick it off?
Sure. So just to start off, could you just tell us what have you had to do differently in your department because of the coronavirus?
Well, that's a good question. Back in February, on February 4th, I noticed an article in the police, journals and stuff about COVID. So it was fairly new back then. So that's when I issued my first orders about using some precautions when dealing with the public, utilizing gloves and masks and hand sanitizers. And it was lucky because we were kind of ahead of most folks. We had hand sanitizers installed in the station in February. I had ordered them in January just by sheer luck, because we had them in our old station. So I ordered a whole bunch of them put throughout the station. And we had orders out February 4th or 5th, changing how, our protocols on contact with people. And then around that time, mid-February to March, man, the whole COVID thing just exploded, as you remember. All sorts of executive orders from the governor. We had so many things happen. We had a possible exposure of one of our officers, so we had to sanitize the station. We had our cars sanitized. I actually installed a decontamination tent in one of our garages so that if an officer was exposed or thought he was exposed, we could collect his uniform, his clothing, decontaminate him, and then put him under a quarantine. So, I mean, it's just changed everything. A lot of things have changed. Our ticket writing is down. The arrests are down. The calls for police services are down. You just don't see the people on the streets, the people driving, especially back in April and May. So now we're just starting to get back into it a little bit. So a lot of things going on with police when it comes to COVID.
Uh-huh. So I've read many things, many articles, which say that the crime rate across the United States has dropped sometimes dramatically in some cases during this pandemic. Is this the case in Hudson as well?
Yeah, remember, Rafi, statistics are deceiving a little bit because if the police are active and they're encountering a lot of people and people are inclined to call and make a complaint, crime rates will go up. If people are not in contact with police or not calling in complaints, crime rates will go down. So the question is it real or is it artificial? Crime rates have generally been dropping. And I think that the COVID, just because of the lack of interhuman interaction, has actually made an actual decrease in crime statistics. As far as Hudson goes, all of our crime statistics have gone down with the exception of domestic violence, which has remained kind of constant. So we were concerned early on that domestic violence incidents would shoot up, but we haven't seen that in our city. It's remained more or less constant with everything else, burglaries, robberies, assaults, larcenies, criminal mischief, everything going down, calls for service. You know, I'm about one quarter, 25% calls for service. So, yeah, so you're right. Your observation is correct. The crime rate has gone down.
Uh-huh. Do you think that the fact has the fact that you're not, that they're just not really as many people getting caught for crimes or getting charged with crimes just during this pandemic, like what you discussed, has that really had like a significant effect? And do you think it's possible that it didn't really have an effect, or do you think like on daily life or on something like that?
Yeah, I think my answer was a little confusing now that I think about it, because I'm telling you on one hand, crime rate is directly linked to police activity and calls for service. But after thinking about it, I actually think the crime rate has gone down. People isolated from other people, it mm-hmm. seems natural that there would be less instances of crime. Of course, what we're worried about is, you know, what happens when people finally are quarantined or self-quarantined too long. You know, what will happen? Or how about when all of a sudden they're let loose? You know, is there going to be a spike? So these are the things that we're thinking about and wondering about right now.
Across the country, I know prisons and jails have been hit extremely hard with and guards who guard them across the country. Many of them a major kind of like hotspot areas, like in places like specific are in prisons and jails. And has Hudson been experiencing that, or has the county been experiencing that?
The county did not deplete its jail population. And remember, this is a county lockup, not a prison, you know?
So right.
It isn't like they lost a complete wing that I know of. And the prison that we have in the city of Hudson is actually for juvenile offenders and has very small population to start with, like maybe less than 20. So we haven't really seen that across the state. Yeah, I mean, it's controversial because, you know, having people in prison released, makes the public uneasy and worried about their safety. But the answer is that no, we haven't really seen that directly in our small area of jurisdiction.
Uh-huh. Do you think Do you think if like Hudson or if Columbia County had like a bigger a prison with more kind of like people living close together with more risks, do you think you or other people, would you have supported helping release people who maybe would be most at risk or would be at the very end of their kind of sentences that they're serving?
Yeah, it's an irony, isn't it? You would think that in a controlled environment like a prison, you would be able to control the spread of this. And then it's ironic, people that are in prison are set free, and people that are free are imprisoning themselves in quarantine. So we have this unusual paradox going on right now. I really don't know enough to comment on the prison situation, because I'm sure that the Correction Officers Union is involved in, you know, talking about their guards' safety. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've been so busy with police-related issues, I'm really not up on what the prison guards' take is on this. And, you know, I also think there's also probably misinformation out there that they're just opening the prison doors and letting hardened criminals out to ravage the public. I don't know that that's necessarily the case either. So I would say, you know, it's hard for me to really answer that accurately, Ref.
Mm-hmm. Switching gears a little bit, why do you think this is a tricky question. I don't know. It's something. Here it is. Why do you think that after several filmed incidents dating back many years of police murdering unarmed black men, that the killing of George Floyd in this moment right now during a global pandemic has sparked nationwide and even worldwide protests? Why do you think that that's happening right now? Do you think that that's there's a reason that it's happening during a pandemic, or do you think it's just a coincidence?
I think they're linked, Rafi. I do think that they're linked. I think you're very astute to point to ask it in that manner, because really, if you sit back and objectively look at the numbers of these incidents with police interactions, you'll see that they're very rare. In fact, extremely rare. But what's happened is, I think it comes at a key time in our society, which is for someone to analyze much smarter than I. But what you've got is, you've got people that have been cooped up owing to the pandemic, right? They haven't been able to go out and congregate. Human beings are social animals. You know, they want to interact. They want to see their friends and go to places and do things. So then they've been isolated. Everything's been shut down in our major cities. And then all of a sudden you have this very visible incident that, you know, which no one can excuse. And then it's on videotape. This is technology and things that we didn't have years ago. Now combine that with social media, which is normally about 90% distortion. And you have a very volatile mix of, and this is what I think you see acting out now. I didn't know of one police person that I know of or heard of that condoned the behavior of that so-called police officer. And yet that wasn't good enough to placate people. And then you have messaging that police are doing this. There's wanton violence against African-Americans. And the statistics strictly don't show that. So I think it's a volatile mix of and also agitators. I think there's certain people that will take advantage of this situation to stir the flames of violence and discord.
Uh-huh. Almost the vast majority of incidents of brutality across the country come against minorities.
Well, I think you should take some time to look at the statistics. I think there was 1,004 police shootings last year. I think 41 of them involved an unarmed person. Of the 41, 17 or no, was it, I think it was less than that, 17 were white males. I think something like nine were African Americans, and of the nine, in six of the incidents, the officer had tried to use less than lethal force prior to deadly physical force. So you're looking at a very small number. So the statement that this brutality is across the board happening to black males or African American people is not necessarily true statistically.
Do you think that there is a systematic a problem of racism? I mean, not just even in the police force, but in the society in general?
Oh, of course. I mean, people by nature, you know, human nature is a very difficult thing because you're going to have racist and ignorant people acting out probably now to the end of time. And that's the thing, too. Like, you know, this guy in Minnesota, this so-called police officer, I don't know of any evidence that this was a racial act, and yet it's being purported to be. The fact, you know, it just bespeaks of an underlying problem, a perception of racism in our country that is there, in some instances being exploited by people that are looking to do damage to our country. That could be, but anytime you're dealing with humor and interaction, and then folks who have been taken advantage of for many, many years, you're going to have this mix of very emotional things, you know. The best that I can do to control it in my police department is to be ever vigilant of our treatment of people of all colors. And I think that's how you build trust. I don't think you build trust overnight by just saying, hey, I'm a great guy and I'm going to treat everyone good. I think you have to demonstrate time and time and time again that you're going to be fair, even-handed, cool, and thoughtful, and prepared in our approach with handling and enforcing laws. And I think over time, you'll gain people's trust.
Okay, so in the wake of these protests, how has the Hudson Police Department been changed?
Okay, so the department's under a lot of scrutiny right now, and then there's also a directive by the mayor to defund us by about 10%. So we've got two things going on. People want to see the money redirected towards social services. And then at the same time, as Rafi was talking about COVID, we're also probably going to have to cut our budget owing to problems across the city with revenue because of COVID. So what we're seeing with the police department is probably some pretty severe budget shortages, and also the call to change policies, to be open with our policies, and to work different programs with social services. And so there's a lot going on in the police right now. Not so much has changed in the last month, but we are obviously going to have a lot of discussion, meetings, and adaptations and changes in the future.
Okay. And do you think these changes have been for the better?
Yeah, I think, look, I think anytime that you can openly discuss, I look at it as a positive thing. Like, I know the behavior of, even though I'm a small department, I know the behavior of my officers. So when they want to have community discussions and I can talk factually about, you know, what they're up to, what they're doing, I find it as an opportunity to show and demonstrate that we are trustworthy and good and helpful and an essential part of the community. I can't speak for every police department, but I look at change as something that always happens in policing and anything, right? In society. So as society changes, policing changes. And so I'm sure there was a time that police policies and things were never made public, that the idea of, like, give you an example, maybe your folks can relate to it, but there is a time when if you thought the police were videotaping you, you would have rioted. You would have said, this is an big invasion of our privacy. But now what do we see is we see the push by the public for us to have body cams. So it's amazing how in a few years, how thoughts change, society changes, So I think it's necessary that police departments change and adapt to what our public wants. And remember, we work for you. I work for you guys. We're public servants, and we are the police. We're fully integrated with the public. So we have to change.
Do you think that, I guess, speaking specifically to the body cam, do you think body cams are important to help hold police accountable for something? Because the incidents that we know of, I guess, police violence have been filmed, but it's very likely that there have been others that just haven't been filmed, right? That just someone hasn't been there to take a camera, to take a video of them.
Any technology, Rafi, any technology is going to be limited. You know, you're going to have a one-dimensional picture of what's going on. You don't always capture everything that's going on. You might have instances where they weren't turned on. And does that create uncertainty? It's only a tool. You know, if it were up to me, I would have them. I would live stream police cameras all the time, because I'm confident of the training and the way I've led the department, what I want, how I want them to behave. I'm happy to demonstrate that. I think the problem you get is sometimes people's personal liberties might be affected, you know, because what you're doing is you're filming people not always at their best. Maybe they're intoxicated, or maybe they're emotional, or you know, so we got to be careful with people's rights, you know. But if we're up to me, I would show everything all the time for total transparency.
Uh-huh. Do you think that you said before you supported these kind of budget cuts that are being made to the police, and do you think it's important to maybe, I guess, across the country, invest more in communities so that the crime rate will drop and there won't be even as much need for police, some problem that I think exists is that coming into a situation with a gun and with in some cases military grade weapons and in some cases not necessarily the exact right training, because police are being spread very thin. I've heard about what they have to respond to. Do you think that it would be better to have sent in people who would be more specialized in that, I guess, without a weapon or something like that?
It's a great question. You see, a lot of the information that I read, I get a little upset because people aren't equipped with full knowledge. What you say is true. For example, should police officers be in the schools as SROs, as parental figures? You know, is that really appropriate? Police going to scenes of emotion, EDP, we call them, emotionally disturbed people, are they best suited? I don't think it's an all or nothing question. You see, what folks don't understand is we work very cooperatively with social services right now. And all the time, we have a relationship with our social workers in town. We have a relationship with our recovery services for people that need that are addicts or alcoholics or homeless. We have quite a association with them now. So I think that the feeling that police are independent or you know, going in there you know, with weapons to accost an emotionally disturbed person isn't a clear picture. For example, we work with what we call MCAT, which is a social services response team when we find someone who's emotionally disturbed to try. They're experts, you know, at dealing with mentally disturbed people. We have all sorts of social services resources. And there's also other departments that we work with. So I don't think it's an all or nothing proposition. Hey, let's get the cops out and move these people in. I think it's the integration of both to benefit society. Mm-hmm. But I do agree that the police are being spread thin with their duties. You know, it can't be, police shouldn't be in a healthy society, shouldn't be the everything for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, we should be good figures and good people and good citizens that people can look up to. But it isn't my responsibility either to take kids fishing and bowling and everything like that. I mean, sure, we would like to do that stuff, but it can't rest solely on the police. It's not a monolithic problem.
Yeah.
Thank you so much to Chief Moore for agreeing to be on our show for the third time this year. Fatal police shootings have been steady at about 1,000 per year. While the number of unarmed people killed by the police, including for black men, appears to have been declining since the founding of Black Lives Matter in 2014. It is indeed difficult to track police conduct in the U.S. But in June, the House passed the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act, which, among other things, mandates for the first time in American history that state and local officials turn over data on use of force broken out by race. Okay, so we are here today in my backyard with Miles here, and Nora is on the phone.
Hello!
And we are interviewing Jackie Thomas.
Hello!
Long-time Hudson resident since 1997, independent contractor, music producer. Here we are. So, Nora, do you want to start us off with the first question?
I will do that. So there is obviously a crossroads in our nation at this time, and a lot of people have a lot of different opinions about all sorts of different things, but one of the most prominent things, and what I feel is one of the most important things, is the Black Lives Matter movement. And just for our listeners, how long have you been involved in the Black Lives Matter movement?
Yeah, and how have you been involved?
That's a really tricky question. I don't know that I ever became a member or involved. I pointed this out to Raphael the other day that anybody that has a clear understanding of justice and doesn't like what's going on right now and decides to do something, by definition, you are a member of the Black Lives Matter. So it would be Miles, and it would be Raphael, and you, right now, you are members of the Black Lives Movement.
So Nora, go ahead.
In the Black Lives Matter movement, it's kind of taken off over social media. There's lots of things that people just, like, repost, and it's just, like, there's, like, the valid Black Lives Matter movement, and then I also feel like there is sort of just, like, the social media side of it. But what is the biggest thing that people overlook with the Black Lives Matter movement, and what, to you, is the core and most important part of the movement that everyone should know about?
Well, this is my opinion. I think that the larger Black Lives Matter movement is trying to do is to create awareness to people, for people to realize that this country can't go on like this, oppressing people based on the color of their skin, that they that things need to change, and it's not going to happen unless it gets brought up to the front and the conversation continued to go on until things change. And there's a long way to go. Do you remember the movement, what was the name, what movement, the Wall Street movement? Occupy Wall Street. Okay. Do you remember what failed about it? People got too comfortable with it and thought that just because you say, you know, Wall Street, and you you say that, that is okay. But no, you have to take action. You have to do something. It's not enough to post on Facebook or Instagram a meme and say, I'm for BLM. You actually have to do something. Did I answer your question?
Yes. And for our listeners, what is, in your opinion and in your view, something that they can do to contribute to the Black Lives Matter movement?
Well, there are plenty of causes up there that you can support. My one right now is Elijah McCain. Do you know about him?
Yes.
I am heartbroken by what happened to him because he's a musician, just like me. And just like me, I don't know, he was 23 years old when he was killed. I'm 63, I'm obviously 40 years is senior, but we have something in common, is that he didn't have a police record. He never done anything. He was a lover of animals, just like you. So I sympathize with him, and I said to people last week. I started saying to people when I was distributing Black Lives Matter Hudson posters, and some people asked me, how much is it? And I said, it's just basically it's free. I'm not charging you for this, but if you think it's worth something to you. Whenever you think the numbers, the posters worth to you, you should donate that money to a cause.
Yeah.
And mostly everybody that I gave that idea said they were going to. I'm not going to check on them, but I think that is a good way. You have to support the causes.
Okay. So could you define for us white privilege?
What do you think it is?
You know, from my perspective, it's kind of a difficult thing because I don't have it, but I see it.
Right.
You know, so it's really difficult. It's basically, the simplest way to do it, to explain it to me, is that you don't see what I see. You don't get treated the way the police treat me in the street. I was working in a job in Ghent, and 3 weeks ago I was switched from me doing the finishing the job to somebody else because the state trooper, I don't know if it's the same one or different ones, decided twice to follow me out of town for no reason. Before that, I got a ticket from doing 35 on 30, which, so we're doing 5 miles over the limit. But then after that happened and I continued going through the town, cars were coming and passing me in the same spot where it was 30 because I was going way too slow for them. But they didn't get a ticket. So this is the thing that I deal with that you guys probably don't deal with. Maybe because you don't drive yet, I don't know. But this is the kind of things that me, as a grown-up, as a black man, I have to deal with. I have to be careful where I go, because I can be... I want to get back home.
Right.
So, how do you think that white people can be made aware of their privilege, in your opinion?
You know, it's a very difficult question, but have you ever seen any of those like visual puzzles that there is something in front of you in a drawing and you need to find a face or something? And then what happened when you finally see the face?
becomes obvious.
You cannot see it.
Right.
Now you see it.
Yeah.
That's how privilege is. Once you see it, you can undo it. Because suddenly you put yourself in the shoes of somebody else. And that is a situation that once you do that, now it becomes a habit. Okay? It's like the team that you root for, even though it loses all the time.
Uh-huh.
You empathize with the team because it's the team that you like. Even if they lose, you still support them because you know how it feels now.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. And so, I guess, like we were talking about, like in police, and like you've said, kind of some things that have happened to you, they kind of have that image or have that bias or have something like that they're biased, I guess. They're
yeah, and at this point is way more than just coincidence.
Right.
Look,
yeah.
I moved to Hudson in 97. Mm-hmm. The reason I moved to Hudson is because that same year, in January of 97, I was a Friday night. I got into a cab, and not even half a minute after I got into the cab, the police stopped the cab, and I got searched. And one of the cops was searching me, and he put his hand on my chest, and I could feel my heart beating. And he asked me if I'm scared, and I say, "What do you think?" There were three cops searching me, and there was one behind me with a gun pressing in my back. And the reason why they did that is because they said that I fit the profile of somebody that just broke into a grocery store. Then on the spring of that year, I was working in a store in Soho, New York, and we worked from 6 to 10 o'clock. We were to move all the merchandise to the center of the store and paint the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And we did it between 6 and 10. When we were done, put everything back where it was. And when I opened the back door, there was a police car in the sidewalk with two cops pointing guns at us. And they asked for ID, and when I gave it to the driver's side, the other one put his gun on his holster after the other one was in, and he said, "Oh, we saw you guys painting. We just wanted to. So if you saw me painting, why are you pointing a gun at me?"
Right. Yeah.
That same summer, I locked my keys in my car in Seoul. And I was trying to open my car with a coat hanger. And suddenly I saw, this was in Broome Street, I saw a cop, police car coming from both directions on that one way. The next thing, I'm on the ground, handcuffed. A police officer pulls my wallet, and I follow him on the ground. He went in front of my vehicle, and I guess he saw that who I was. He saw the car was registered to me. And what they did, then pulled me up, take the handcuffs off, and said that somebody called and said that somebody was breaking into a car. But nobody asked me what I was doing.
Yeah. And guns shouldn't be pointed in
situations. No, and
not
only that, there were four cops pointing guns at me that day.
Right.
Even when I was laying on the ground, handcuffed.
Yeah, and even, like, breaking into a grocery store, you don't have to, like, point a gun at anyone for that. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Like, all of these, yeah.
Did I answer your question?
I guess why do you think it's important for people, like, once they will put themselves white people will put themselves in the shoes of a black person, and they can under, or at least a little bit understand what their white privilege really means, Why do you think it's important for that to happen? Do you think that they'll be able to they'll realize and they'll do something?
Because you still are the majority in this country. That's what else can I say? And I know that many of you don't like what's going on. So we need your help. Do something. I mean, I appreciate anything that anybody do or say that can further this situation and come to make it come to an end. I respect that. I respect what you're doing right now. Right. This is progress to me.
Right. Yeah, we were talking a bit, I guess, before the interview, just chatting. And you were telling me that like 20 years ago, or I don't know, but a time ago, you would never have guessed that so many, like you described an image of white women linking arms and kind of standing.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of these protests are filled with white people as well as...
Yeah, because a lot of people are becoming aware of the injustice, the criminal justice, basically, what is doing to minorities in this country. And they're waking up to it. I mean, it has to do a lot with... we talked last week about a kid saying to their parents when hearing that some black guy got shot, and the kid said, "Didn't that happen last week?" Well, now people are starting to see, because of the cell phone, are starting to see that this has been a common occurrence. Only that cell phone didn't happen 400 years ago. It's that later now is being documented because of cell phone. But other than that, probably nothing will be going on because it's too obvious. I just show him, Miles, a video of a cop abusing a 14-year-old kid right before when you're getting my drink. And he look at it and you were in disbelief because it was this big officer and half of a 14-year-old kid, probably like one-third or less the size of him, and he was punching the kid and arresting the kid because he thought the kid had marijuana, which is another thing to think about. Why are you going to punch a 14-year-old kid even if he was smoking marijuana? Why would somebody go to jail for marijuana? Maybe I'm going off the rails here.
What are some things that I guess that white people say when talking about Black Lives Matter or just these nationwide protests in general that you kind of really have a problem with or takes you off, or something that people would say when in response to this or talking about it?
I don't know how I can answer that, because the people that are involved with the white folks that I know that are involved with the Black Lives Matter movement, it's because they know something is wrong. The people that are not with the movement, that are white, are the ones that are saying things that are not right. Like, these are the ones, I'm talking about the ones that say that all lives matter. So I can't think of anyone. I mean, I have a lot of friends that have reached out to me over the past 2-3 months and ask me questions about these things. I have friends that used to thought that I would think that I was just paranoid about these things years back. And now they see that it really is something that has been happening. So,
yeah.
I don't know. The people that I know that I talk about it are conscious, and that's the best. That's it. I can say anything negative about that. It's better late than never, I guess.
Yeah. Even with these people, do you think they ever like will assume things that they just don't know, or maybe? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't know, but do people, even if they kind of, they feel that you're, that they understand and they support the mm-hmm. movement, like you've said, like, I guess, will they kind of be unaware of some things and then say things they shouldn't, like you said, you're getting too worked up about something that's not very important or something like that. You're overreacting.
That's not happening anymore.
Uh-huh.
I will probably notice uh-huh. if somebody will do something like that. I mean, nobody says that to me anymore. Uh-huh. Everybody's very supportive about it. Or, I mean, it could be that everybody's like learned how to not say anything. But I'm hoping that's not the case. I think that people are very conscious mm-hmm. of what's going on, and perhaps for the first time they realize that even if that doesn't happen, it's not happening to them, it's not right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It shouldn't happen to anybody.
Yeah. We've discussed, as we've said, we've discussed a bit before this interview, and we talked. You talked about as the rain is starting to pick up a bit around us. But
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Are you getting wet? You're under.
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Okay, I'm good. I'll just move the recorder a bit closer to you so mm-hmm. that it stays dry. We've discussed a bit before this interview, and you've said that you immigrated to the U.S. From Panama.
Mm-hmm.
In your experience, is the U.S. as a country, I guess in your experience being in other countries, is the U.S. as a country unique in the extent of its, like, systematic racism, I guess?
I'm going to be brutally honest with you.
Uh-huh.
The hypocrisy and the pretending is over.
Yeah.
The whole world knows that this image that the United States has been giving, at least since World War II, around the world, of this leadership and braveness, and everybody around the world know that it's fake. It's not real.
Yeah.
I mean, the United States, right, do you hear what happened today?
What?
The United States is being banned from traveling to Europe.
Right, yeah.
Americans are being banned from traveling to Europe. Iraq has, what do you call it when you're looking for a criminal?
I don't know.
A bolo?
They are searching, they're looking for, they want to have the President of the United States arrested by the international community.
Oh, an arrest warrant.
An arrest warrant for, yes, for that individual that I don't like to say his name. So, these are signs that, I mean, this is the thing. What has been going on, it's been going on for a long time, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You can see outside of the United States what really is going on.
Mm-hmm.
The Middle East already, the people in the Middle East knew what was going on a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Groups like, I'm not defending groups like ISIS or Al-Qaeda or any of them. I don't like them. I don't like what they do. I don't like their responses. I don't like how they go about. But when you ask why they do what they do, the ones that are not doing it for the money, they're doing it because they don't like how the United States go into their countries, steal their resources, brutalize their people, and gets away with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's inspiring to see these protests across the world.
It's across the world, yeah.
You see in Paris and throughout, everywhere, really.
I mean, to see Germany was one of the biggest ones.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's where I always find it interesting how in this country, they are trying to make Antifa the bad guys.
Anti-fascist.
Yeah. Who did the United States fought in World War II?
Fascists.
The fascists.
Right.
So what anti-fascist means? You know, I see so many things that I can't understand. Like when I see that guy driving around here, sometimes I see him in this big pickup truck with the Confederate flag and with the American flag. It's like, you flying both flags? How does it make sense to fly the Confederate and the American flag at the same time?
Yeah, they fought against it.
Yeah.
Confederacy attacked America. Yeah. Yeah, when Germany is when Germany knows that you have systematic racism problems, you know.
When the Germans
you know you've got them.
Is, yeah, but you have to understand one thing though. A lot of the stuff that the Germans learn, they learn it from the United States.
Yep.
Do you know that before the war in Germany, in the war in Europe, World War II started, went full blown, there was, just here in New York, there were a Nazi in Madison Square Garden.
Oh, uh-huh.
There was a huge thing there of Nazis. Yeah, and the one person that tried to condemn it got beat up. You should look it up. This is things that you should look up.
Yeah,
this is historical. Mm-hmm. So the Germans, in a way, they learned from the United States of how to go about discriminating.
Do you think that it's a coincidence that there has been such an uprising of this scale and protests across, as we've said, across the country, across the world, and it's happening during a pandemic? Do you think that that's a coincidence? Because, because as technology is improving, there are many, many more videos of just this police brutality and just killing unarmed African Americans, but there have been other instances, and it hasn't become what it is right now.
I'm an atheist, but I do believe in karma. I think that karma has taken this opportunity for this nation to face itself. And what better way than to making everybody stay home? Sort of like when you're in school and you don't behave yourself and you get sent to the corner, you know? Time out? Okay. The United States is having a timeout.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I think, do you have anything else you'd like to...
Just whenever it is that you guys are doing, please continue to do it and encourage more of it, and talk to your friends and make them get involved and do things and do a fundraiser. Find out about somebody that is in jail for something really stupid, like that happens in this country, like if somebody gets caught driving with the tail light broken and gets a ticket and doesn't pay for the ticket, then gets thrown in jail because he doesn't pay for the ticket, and then that person ends up losing their job because they're in jail, and then when they come out of jail they can't find a job because now they have a record because they were in jail. So it's the system that needs to change. It's the system that oppresses people that way. That is what needs to change. If that change, everybody is going to be okay. It's just that this is working for a small group of people in this country right now to keep things the way they are. It's just the same as abortion. Abortion is not a religious thing. It never been. It's another way of oppressing people.
Poor people.
Yes, that can afford. Because if you can afford, the rich people, even if the if abortion was illegal, I bet you that the rich folks will still be able to afford to have an abortion.
Right. Yeah, it's affecting the poor people who can't afford.
Exactly. Yeah. That's it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay. Thank you for interviewing me and giving you my view. Thanks.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
This was the first time that Jackie Thomas has joined us on this program. Thank you so much. The social media hashtag Black Lives Matter was launched in 2013 by several black women activists after the acquittal of George Zimmerman in the killing of Trayvon Martin, and gained national attention after the killings of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and Eric Garner in New York City. Okay, we are now transitioning to our music segment, and we have two songs that were suggested by Jackie Thomas, and they were both released in the wake of these nationwide protests and this movement across the world, really. And they were both released in the past couple weeks. And so our first song is by Ruth B. It is called If I Have a Son.
Son, I'll teach him to be brave. 'Cause if I have a son, he's never really safe. And when you run to the corner store for a snack, I wanna know that you'll make it back home. Oh, your skin, it glitters like gold. There's love inside of your soul. But no matter what you say, no matter what you do, this world will never be as friendly to you. I wanna keep you close, I wanna keep you safe. I hope I see the day where I don't have to pray every time you go. Every time you go, and if I have a girl, I'll teach her to be strong. 'Cause even when you're right, they'll tell you that you're wrong. And if you want something, you'll work twice as hard. 'Cause that's the only way we get far. Your skin, it glitters like gold. There's love inside of your soul. But no matter what you say, no matter what you do, this world will never be as friendly to you. I wanna keep you close, I wanna keep you safe. I hope I see the day where I don't have to pray every time you go. Every time you go. I saw a man lose his life, all 'cause his skin looked like mine. I hope the world makes a change, so when you get here it's not the same. Your skin, it glitters like gold. There's love inside your soul. But no matter what you say.